Good evening. I'd like to call our meeting to order. We'll have the invocation from Pastor Dennis Fast of the Reedley Mennonite Brethren Church. And following that, we'll have our Pledge of Allegiance from Mayor Pro Tem Betancourt. Would you please rise with me for our invocation?
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for allowing us to come each meeting and just share this moment with you. And I want to wish all of you a great holiday season and a Merry Christmas as well. So let's pray. Thanks, God, for this day. You said through Jeremiah to the captives that they should seek the welfare of the city to which they had been sent. And so we're here this evening for that same purpose. So in a way, it's godly work to seek the welfare of our city. Thank you for this place. Lord, we know we have challenges and issues and problems. I thank you for our law enforcement, and I just pray that you'd help them as they face difficulties day by day. Thank you for the city staff and for the council, the commissions, and every area of work that makes the city run. Thank you for the citizens, too, our people. The city is lit up during this season. Many homes are decorated with lights to just remind us of the importance of this season. And those of us in this Christian tradition believe that Jesus is the light of the world, and so we thank you for that. And so would you bless this meeting and give godly guidance and wisdom to our city leaders. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Please join the council in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with
liberty and justice for all. We have a presentation this evening, an independent review of the Minkler incident, and I'd like to turn this over to our chief at this time.
Mayor, did we roll call?
Oh, I'm sorry. Got all excited for this presentation. May I have the roll call, please?
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. Okay.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. It's with pleasure, and I wish they were here on it for a different reason, but unfortunately, that's not the case today, but it's a pleasure to introduce today three members from the Fresno County Sheriff's Department who will be giving a presentation to you and to the audience regarding the final report from the Minkler incident. I'd like to start off by first introducing Undersheriff Scott Jones, who's here representing the Sheriff Mims, and then Lieutenant Neil Dadian and Lieutenant Arlie Terrence. And they will actually be your main presenters this evening. I'd like to extend a lot of gratitude to the Sheriff's Department. The report was very detailed, very informative for the Reedley Police Department, and we have taken advantage of the report that they have provided to look at ourselves and see what we can do to improve as a department, equipment needs, et cetera, and that's something that we've already taken care of. And we're hoping to implement some of those changes here in the near future. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lieutenant Terrence and Lieutenant Dadian.
Thank you. Good evening. As the chief said, I wish we were here for different circumstances, but there's many opportunities within this presentation for not only members of law enforcement, but for the community to learn what happened in this incident. It was an incident that got media attention all over the nation, and it was a tragedy. And through this study, we've had a better understanding exactly of what led up to this and what we can do better in the future. So with that, we'll start our presentation. This is a quote that the sheriff gave after the incident, and it really shows that the sheriff was pretty courageous in her efforts to get an unflinching analysis of what occurred during this incident in Minkler and how we could prevent it in the future. And As being part of the process for this review, I can tell you the sheriff put no guidelines whatsoever on the review. There was nothing that we couldn't go into or couldn't delve into. Everything was open. Nothing was out of bounds. And it was nice to see that the sheriff wanted something so transparent. And when she hired an outside firm to do this review, which we have now, those were her instructions to the company that we hired. And there was absolutely nothing that couldn't be delved into, and that was nice to see. The purpose of the review was to help the Sheriff's Department assess our policies, our policing actions, our tactics and training, review the force that was used. There was hundreds of rounds fired during this incident, develop findings, and identify our best practices for the future. The purpose of hiring an outside firm was to provide an advisory recommendations, enhance policing knowledge, and improve officers' safety, skill, and awareness in dealing with incidents such as the Minkler incident. How this all started was there was a series of crimes within the community of Minkler adjacent to the Minkler cash store. There were about 17 arson fires and about six shootings that were suspicious or undetermined in nature. The 17 fires, 11 were determined by CAL FIRE to be arson-related. They were purposely set. And the six that weren't determined to be arson, they were suspicious in nature. The CAL FIRE investigator concluded that the arsonist was using the hours of darkness to remain undetected. He was working at night so that people wouldn't see him. Out of those arson calls, as well as reviewing the data from within the Sheriff's Department, there were 14 service-related calls in the 9 months prior. Those calls were shots fired and disturbances. There was also shots fired into the the Minkler cash store adjacent to where this ended up ultimately taking place. So there were reports written, there was calls for service generated, there was arson investigations, and also shooting investigations in the 9 months prior to February 25th. 3 days prior, Mrs. Minkler, who lived in the adjacent trailer, five rounds were fired into her trailer with a high-powered rifle. The rounds entered her residence about 2 o'clock in the morning, bounced around, and struck Mrs. Minkler in the backside. It did. The bullet had ricocheted off so many things that it didn't penetrate her skin. So she was injured, she was bruised, but she didn't require hospitalization. So she was not transported from the scene, but she was injured during that shooting. What took place then was a combined effort from the CAL FIRE investigators and our homicide unit within the Sheriff's Department. A search warrant was written because it was believed that Rick Lyles was responsible for the arsons and for the shootings. During the operational briefing, after the search warrant was signed by a judge, there was 13 search warrant team members there. A briefing was conducted which reviewed the five shootings at the Minkler cash store, a shooting of a PG&E transformer, and the two shootings at the neighbor's home, resulting in the injury to the neighbor. All of these items were covered in the briefing before the search warrant service took place. Rick Lyles was the person believed to be responsible for the shootings. However, that no one had ever witnessed him shooting. There was a trajectory done based on the shootings where the bullets had come from, and it was believed to have been from near, adjacent, or around his trailer. But again, no one had ever seen him with a gun in his hand that had contacted law enforcement. He had an ongoing dispute with his neighbor, and the issue was he had been made to move out of the double-wide trailer into a single-wide trailer that he was renting, and this upset him, and that developed into a feud with his neighbor, Mrs. Minkler. During the search warrant service, there were 8 deputies from the Fresno County Sheriff's Department Homicide Unit, one patrolman, and 5 investigators from CAL FIRE. This is Rick Lyles' trailer that was the subject of the signed search warrant from a judge, from the investigation signed by a judge, and that was authorized to be searched. When police officers have a signed search warrant, they are required by law to knock and notice the occupants of the residence, and they're required to give the residents a reasonable amount of time to come to the door to answer the door. This was done extensively. The deputies knocked on the outside. They pounded on the sides of the trailer. You can imagine the trailer's not very big. They got on their PA system. They announced over their PA system. They identified Rick Lyles by name and requested him to come to the front door. They got no response. They even went as far as to call the inside of the residence. They heard the phone ring and heard an answering machine pick up, and they still didn't get any response from anyone inside. They knew at the time from their surveillance that their vehicles were there. They believed that they were home. So they believed they were home at the time of the service. The three members that gained entry to the porch, what this is a single wide trailer with an add-on room, which is, this is the interior porch. If you look closely, you can see the pick and the ram laying in, they're covered in white material that comes out of a fire extinguisher. It's a small room. Only three of them could stand close to the front door. It's enclosed, it's cluttered. There's a washer and dryer. And there's an exterior door to that exterior add-on, and then the front door to the trailer inside that add-on. Very confined space. Once they make entry into this add-on room, they hear a calm male's voice ask, "What do you guys want?" Which they've been pounding on the door for at least 6-7 minutes. They identify themselves as Sheriff's Department deputies, and they ask him to open the door. He tells them, "You have the wrong house." He asks, "Who are you looking for?" And they identify him, and he says, "You have the wrong house." He lives next door. They ask him what his name is, and he identifies himself using his first name, Rick, and last name, Shepherd, which is Diane Lyles. Diane is Shepherd's, it's her maiden name. So he doesn't cooperate, and he doesn't open the front door. At this point, the deputies prepare to make entry into the front door. As you can see, there's many bullet holes. As they prepared to make entry, he fired blindly through the front door where he believed the deputies to be standing. Deputy Wallmeyer was fatally struck in that small space. This is a video from a camera that was set up next door that this is after the deputies have made forced entry into the exterior door of the add-on. There's three members inside that are inside knocking on the front door and conversing with the male subject inside. What you can hear now is some radio traffic. 2 David 10 is the sergeant of the homicide team. And he's advising Sheriff's Communications Center that the deputies are inside and they're still searching. The tone that you hear is an emergency tone that we use to clear the channel so everyone else knows not to talk because the deputies are engaged in dangerous activity. So here they're having the conversation with the male subject inside, we believe to be Mr. Lyles. So three deputies went inside, and as you saw, only one deputy came out. At this point, there's two deputies down inside, and the personnel on scene believe both deputies are down inside. Thankfully, that didn't turn out to be the case. What happens at this point is the deputies retreat back near the patrol car. They develop a rescue plan for the downed officers. This is something that we trained for. I know the Reedley Police Department trains for it. It's something that you don't ever hope to use in your career, but it's something that's required when an officer goes down and you need to go back in and get them so we can get them the medical aid that they need. The deputies are back by the vehicle. The suspect is continuing his outbound gunfire just indiscriminately through his trailer, shooting out at the deputies while they're trying to get their plan together to go back in and rescue their fellow officers.
What you're going to see here is a pretty heroic effort by the deputies and fire investigators to get those two deputies out and extract them.
What you hear right there are the first Reedley units going on scene. They're advising over on our channel that Reedley units are 1097 on the shots fired, meaning on scene, they're there to help because they know there's a downed officer, like we would come help them. And this is during this time, it can be described as nothing other than a gun battle. This subject is shooting indiscriminately outside. The outbound gunfire is consistent, it's constant. The deputies that were on scene, they advised that as they move, they felt like he was tracking their movements. You can see them flinch at different times. It's continuous, and what these deputies are doing, if you can't see because of the fence, other deputies holstered their gun, went towards the gunfire so they could pull their fellow officers out. That's what they're trying to do right now during this rescue.
This goes on for about 4 minutes, which is a long time for a gunfight. In law enforcement, gunfights are usually over within a matter of a few seconds. This is probably one of the more prolonged, sustained gunfights that we have experienced. And certainly any other agency in the Central Valley has experienced for quite a while. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to drag Detective Wallenmeyer out. They get him to about the threshold, and he has a gun belt on, similar to what I'm wearing. And when they were dragging him out, that became hung up somewhere on the back across the threshold. Because as you saw in the pictures, there was a bunch of things out there, and you know it's wooden, and we later discovered it's probably a nail or some sort of snag that prevented them from taking him out. So what they're trying to do, while they're shooting and suppressing his fire, is trying to figure out why he's stuck down there. And mind you, it's difficult to stand up because that's where the outbound gunfire is coming at head and shoulder level. So they're trying to keep as low as possible. So they don't want to pick him up, they're trying to drag him. And you can see underneath the slat of the board, the surveillance camera, you can see a bunch of activity down there. You can't see exactly what they're doing, but Sergeant Lopez and Detective Toscano and Deputy
McEwen.
McEwen are trying to drag Detective Wallenmeyer out of there. The gunfire goes on continuously.
We'll take questions at the end.
There's probably not a point in here where there wasn't any gunfire. The deputy said that when he would fire at them, they would shoot back and suppress with a high rate of fire. But when they would run out of ammunition and their handgun or their shotgun and transition to their rifle or handgun, their rate of fire would slow and he would increase. So it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for about 4 minutes. Here pretty quick. I'm going to move up here and kind of guide you a little bit. You'll see
bandolier
object come in over here, and that's a bandolier of a shotgun ammunition. One of Deputy Harris, the uniformed patrol deputy who was there, told the Cal Fire guy, "Go back to my car. I got some shotgun ammo in my car on a bandolier." He gets that. Tries to throw that forward to Detective Eaton, also brings a shotgun out of the car, tries to throw that to Detective Eaton. That didn't work out too well for him. He eventually picks up the shotgun.
There it went.
The bandolier. Shotgun's coming.
There's the shotgun.
It got hung up on that small chain link fence about waist high. You'll eventually see the Cal Fire investigator come in. Brings the shotgun, gives it to Detective Eaton, and then he starts the suppression fire. Meanwhile, they're starting to make headway and get Detective Wallenmeyer out.
He's requesting emergency medical services. Code 3 is lights and siren because there's an officer who's been severely wounded. So at this point, a call is going out to all surrounding agencies. 1199 officer down, which is the worst call there is in police jargon. And this is when surrounding agencies start to show up to assist.
Okay, we were fairly lucky that morning because it was a Thursday morning. We had a lot of folks working. Everybody was at their day job. The Sheriff's Department SWAT team is a collateral assignment team. In other words, we're not full-time. We all have various jobs throughout the agency, and then we come together when we're activated and perform as a SWAT team. I'm the SWAT commander, so we got the call immediately as the gun battle was going on, got activated before it was actually requested, so we had a lot of resources out there fairly soon. So what happens is, after we get Deputy Wallenmeyer extracted, if I could, sorry I didn't bring a pointer, but here's the home where Sally Minkler was shot. Up here is the target location. This is where the crime scene is. This is what we're concerned with. And you'll see, where the Minkler store is, and then across the street you have a bunch of patrol cars and a shop. Right where the trailer is, and between the trailer and the shop where that dried tree is, there's a sea train, a cargo container. You had a number of first responders showing up there, and that's just a short distance, probably 30 yards from the corner of the trailer. So we had a number of first responders showing up there, and that was the north or northwest containment. The south containment were officers coming in on Reed Avenue and stopping short here, and this was about 80 to 85 yards south of the suspect or the target location. And this is where Officer Behar responded. Okay, there's a shot of the trailer from the south looking north, and this is a similar view, although it's much closer to what those that string of patrol cars you saw on the south end would have seen, where Officer Behar was positioned. Okay, at this point we have still have an ongoing gun battle. This is about an hour into the fight at this point since he fired the first shot. This south containment where Officer Behar is, Officer Behar actually positioned himself right up here in the wedge of this door and the door frame of the sheriff's patrol car. And he was keeping containment from the south, as well were a number of other people. But he was stationed right up there. He had his rifle with him, and he was doing a good job of keeping containment. The concern that you heard over the radio, one of the SWAT team snipers had done an entire 360-degree reconnaissance of that, ended up over there at one point, told him that was a very vulnerable area for those officers because they were pretty much pinned down. But keep in mind, we had to have somebody there because we had to have complete containment. So somebody had to be there. And it just so happens that those officers responded and they were in the best position to hold that southern containment. Here's a view from that patrol car where Officer Behar was. And you can see off past the trees, the shrubs, and the bamboo, you can see the single-wide mobile home where suspect Lyles was at. Here's a physician outside of that home, but looking from where about where he was out through the brush to where that patrol car is. And here's a little bit closer view. You can see that patrol car in the center of the white sheriff's patrol vehicle. That's where Officer Behar was positioned. This is a cell phone video from a house across the street to the southwest. You'll see the officers are pinned down here for quite a while, and they're very, very cautious of what's occurring. You can see some officers over here, they have a mirror, and they're looking because they were concerned if this guy came out, they couldn't see him, so they had to improvise, and that's a good tactical way to do that. We had people stationed all along here, and in a minute, you're going to hear a gunfight. And this was archetypical of the gunfire that was going on there. It was pretty much sporadic at this point, but continuous, every few minutes.
And now he's shooting both ways, both north and south, out of his house.
And this is aimed, directed fire. This is not indiscriminate fire just shooting through walls. He had a sight picture, and he was selecting targets of opportunity to kill.
During this time and before Officer Behar was shot, these officers are behind the car. The suspect skips around underneath the car. It hits a deputy in the leg, but he has extra magazines in his pocket, extra rounds. The bullet hits him in the leg, doesn't penetrate, and just spins like a top in between two officers, and they both just look at it and then look at each other and get back in the gunfight. He was definitely zeroing in and targeting these officers who were trying to keep containment.
We're not sure at what point in time this was taken. We believe it was before Officer Behar was hit, but he would have been positioned right up just outside the view. We're at the right side of this sheriff's patrol car, and probably just a few moments before he was fatally wounded.
The Bearcat's the armored SWAT vehicle.
Okay, so this is one of my SWAT sergeants. You see where the yellow sign is? That's about just a little bit past that is where the C-Train container was. He's over there with a number of other officers. He can see the directed rifle fire going at these officers on the southern container. The armored vehicle was staged back to the west, probably about a quarter of a mile or so. It's about actually 4/10 of a mile over. And the armored vehicle was over there and had been making transportation movements back and forth, extracting officers out of that location. We were trying to get the first responders, the non-SWAT cops out and SWAT cops in.
Northernmost patrol car, northeastern most patrol car, right at the passenger door. That's what
after Officer Behar was hit, everybody can do this without. Okay, right here. He was stationed right here. What you see right there, that streak, that's his blood. And that drags all the way over. Right? And I hate to be so crude as to tell you that, but that's exactly what you're looking at. He was immediately covered, taken by officers. They drug him out to the west and then south, and got him in a unmarked sheriff's pickup truck, moved south, and then taken to a waiting ambulance. And all those folks exposed themselves to gunfire, including the ambulance crew, who was also in the line of fire.
How are you, Winston?
Go ahead.
There's one down, he's extracted, and he's going on his way out.
10-40. Where is traffic coming from?
Where are you? We're southwest. Part 6.
10-40. So the contact is around. See if you can get a feed and a trajectory on that.
Okay, a closer view of the vehicle that Officer Behar was stationed behind. You can see down there by the rear tire, that's his M4 patrol carbine that he was using that day. There's a kind of a top-down view of the vehicles and how they were positioned. We responded to SWAT teams from the Sheriff's Office, the Fresno Police Department, the Clovis Police Department on this incident. We had a number of things that we were trying to accomplish while this was going on. Keep in mind, we had probably over 150 first responders showing up, which is great. The problem is it became very difficult to get control of that, get your arms around it, because there's a number of different agencies on different radios, in different locations, and nobody, they all came at pretty much within the first 20 to 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult when you have so many people coming. It's like people coming to a party, right? And you have, you're trying to hand out drinks and snacks, and pretty soon you get overwhelmed and you can't greet and meet everybody. And, you know, it's kind of a soft analogy to use, but I think you can all relate to something like that, where you have an event and then all of a sudden they just come in waves. And that's how the cops arrived here, mm-hmm. which was, again, really nice to have, but difficult to get them out of the way so I could get the SWAT cops in there and start moving them. Here's a picture of our armored vehicle, which we share with the Clovis Police Department and the Fresno Police Department SWAT teams. This had a number of missions that we were trying to use it for, primarily for transportation of officers who were exposed in and out of that location so I could get SWAT cops in and non-SWAT cops out. But we had like about 8 different things here we were trying to do with that vehicle. And obviously, you know, we could have used 2 or 3 vehicles that day. We eventually did get another one from the Hanford Police Department. It arrived probably about noon that day. So what we were dealing with when we were trying to figure this out was a hostage in sight. We had information that his wife, Diane Lyles, might be inside, but we did not know if she was a willing hostage or an unwilling hostage. So we were hesitant to put directed fire in there. Most of the fire went high up into the eaves just to suppress him and keep him down. But we didn't want to shoot an innocent person. And we had concerns about her status, if she was there on her own accord or if she was just caught up in it and didn't have the opportunity to get out. So that narrowed the tactical operations. Obviously, in the middle of a gunfight, you have to take care of the immediate need, which is suppressing the fire, and then you'll develop plans as you can as the situation allows. So we're trying to figure out how can we divert this guy with chemical agents. We were using some of our tools, which is a little handheld throw robots, a sting ball, some things of that nature. Eventually, we got Diane out after he killed himself. We got Diane out. We used some of our tools, did a search, figured out that, you know, he had committed suicide, and turn it over to the crime scene from there.
At that point, the investigation continued into the residence, and entry was made by the SWAT team. The location was secured, and then detectives completed their search of the residence. Inside the residence, they found many things. This is a picture of the gun that he was firing. In total, he fired about 5 guns during this incident, 86 rounds. And he had a stockpile of ammunition. He had he had lots of ammunition, and he wasn't afraid to use it. The next footage you're going to see is some local news footage that was taken on scene. This is about a half mile down the road from, or even maybe a mile down the road from the location.
Yeah, this is to the west. You'll see the sheriff come on in a minute, but before that, it's just, I think it's news footage. It might be cell phone footage, but listen to the gunfight in the background. That typewriter sound.
You can see the overwhelming response from all the local officers. Now, the person responsible for all of this is Rick Lyles. What we learned about him is that he was a loner. He was unemployed, although he had previous experience as a security officer. He was married. He had been divorced previously. And contrary to belief, he didn't have any alcohol in his system when this happened. He did have some medications that he was taking for depression and those type of things. But he was just truly a ticking time bomb that nobody knew was ticking except for those closest to him, and they didn't share that information with anyone. These are, some of the things that we learned from interviewing Diane. I got to tell you, in my 18 years of law enforcement, it was one of the oddest interviews I've ever been a part of. She reported that he was seeing monkey spiders in his home. He was angry at people that he perceived who had wronged him. He had fired outside windows of his home. Sitting inside, he'd fire outside at these spider monkeys. But she never told anybody about this, so we had no way of knowing. He also had body armor in the house. He kept a police scanner. He had an issue with law enforcement, felt that he had been wronged by them, and he often listened to the scanner, which on that scanner inside his home there, that's the living room, we found the Sheriff's Department frequency as well as Reedley Police Department frequency that he would listen to. He was, according to his wife, often armed. He would carry a handgun on him at all times. He would conceal it when he went out in public. He had guns loaded and stashed throughout the house as if waiting for a big gunfight one day. But she never shared that with anyone. He had ammunition and magazines, literally hundreds of rounds. Positioned throughout the house, and he would discharge his gun routinely from inside his house, shooting outside, out the windows, out the open front door, and just bizarre behavior like this. He was on multiple prescription medications, but everything that was in his system at the time of the autopsy was therapeutic levels of the drugs that you see. No methamphetamine, no alcohol. No cocaine, no marijuana, nothing like that. Just prescription levels, therapeutic levels of prescription medication.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that while he had some mental issues, obviously, he was not a crazed gunman. He was very calculating, and he knew what he was doing.
He had made statements. We learned that he was going to take some cops out and then kill himself. We learned this after the fact, obviously. No one shared that information beforehand. These were the firearms that he had inside his residence February 25th, the day of the search warrant. And all of those weapons were at the ready for him during this incident. These are the two weapons that we believe he fired when he fatally wounded Deputy Wallmeyer and Officer Behar. The one on top is a AR-15, and the bottom is a rifle that we believe he used to shoot out the south side.
And that's pretty high-power scope on that rifle. It's a deer hunting rifle, and that's what he was targeting those officers with and Officer Behar.
He had body armor in his closet. No indication that he had been wearing it during this incident, but he did have it. He had ammunition for all of the guns, hundreds. You'll see pictures here of ammunition that he had in drawers, stashed throughout the house, positioned at different locations, and he'd been collecting ammunition for quite some time. In all, Lyles fired 86 rounds from all the different weapons that you see. Those were the shell casings that were found inside the residence after the search warrant was completed. So after this review was done, there was a number of findings and recommendations. The entire report is online at the Sheriff's Department website. And what we tried to learn was what went right and what went wrong. You know, some of the things that we did that day and our preparation will certainly improve upon, but there's no doubt that the one person responsible for this incident was Mr. Lyles. He's the one that decided to shoot through a door at people he hadn't even seen, fire indiscriminately, zero in on marked officers coming to the aid of other officers. He is definitely the person responsible for this incident. It was a lawful, signed search warrant by a judge. The officers were there doing their job. Everything was completely within the confines of the law in regards to the service of that search warrant. Unfortunately, he decided to fire just indiscriminately through the door, killed one of our deputies, and ultimately killed a Reedley City police officer. He murdered both these fine gentlemen, and I think that having worked here at the Reedley Police Department before and now working for the Sheriff's Department, these are two of the best officers I've ever had the pleasure of working with, and they're going to be missed. And we're going to take away from this the lessons that we can learn, and we're going to apply them in the future, and we're never going to forget these two guys. Of the things that happened on this incident, there was 25 officers that were involved that actually fired. There was hundreds of officers that responded, but there was 25 officers that fired. Six law enforcement agencies who fired 607 rounds into the trailer. This incident, the gunfire was continuous from start to finish for 75 minutes. And if you think about that as a long time, the Hollywood shootout that is one of the more famous shootouts didn't last half that long. This was a very long time for a sustained gun battle. So the reasons why the officers fired, and I think the reason why some of this is in here is some people have been critical about how many rounds were fired. And these are the reasons why the officers fired. They were trying to get Detective Wallmeyer, who was critically injured. They're trying to get him out of the location. Deputy Harris was struck both on his belt, in his shirt, and in the eye. Officer Behar was critically wounded. They were attempting to stop Lyles from shooting. They were trying to ensure that no innocent parties were injured, and they were shooting so they could conduct their rescues and enable them to rescue the injured. The independent assessment on the rounds fired found that, the public safety rounds that were fired, there were no injuries or death as a result of the rounds that were fired by law enforcement. There was some speculation when this initially occurred that there may have been some friendly fire issues to this. It's absolutely false. Not the case. The coroner's office conducted the autopsies, and that's without merit. There was no friendly fire whatsoever. Law enforcement officers were awarded these medals as a result of this. There's 33 heroic officers that were given all of these medals and recognized for their valor that day. We thank you for your time, and we'll take any questions if you or the council has any.
Well, there was an article that I believe I read in the Fresno Bee where somebody criticized the way the process was done by you folks. And if that was true, what have you learned from that you would do different?
Well, the Sheriff's Department has policies regarding the service of search warrants such as this. And part of that is what's commonly referred to as a risk assessment. And it's a form that we use to assess the risk that's involved with the service of a given search warrant. Through that analysis and review, there were some errors that were made in the risk assessment. It doesn't change the fact that this was a lawful search warrant. It's not an issue of law. It's not an issue of whether we had a right to be there. It's not an issue of whether we could go into that residence. It was just has to do with how we respond to those. And so some of the articles, and I didn't read all of them, but that allude to that, there were some things that we will do better in the future. But as far as a matter of law, everything was completely legal and on solid legal ground for that event that took place.
As you guys know, I was part of that unit many, many years ago. And, you know, you got to understand sometimes that these things happen fast. I mean, you get information fast. You process that information and you go into action quickly. I mean, you get a location on evidence, or you get a location on a suspect. And sometimes there isn't a lot of time between the time that you have to act. So, you know, I remember when that criticism came out, and, you know, it was really unmerited in my opinion, because, yeah, you know, you can look at these situations afterwards when things go bad and Monday morning quarterback that to death. But I can tell you from being there that, you know, we did the same thing many times. We went out and, you know, we served search warrants and, you know, God was with us and nothing ever happened. But it isn't anything that just happened that day. I mean, that's been going on forever. And you know, Artie, you were the sergeant in that unit for a time. I mean, those guys, what they did was heroic. And it's unfortunate that Wallenmeyer lost his life and Behar lost his life, but they didn't do anything wrong. You know, it just so happened that Rick Lyles, they ran across the wrong person, and this guy wasn't going to be taken alive. But, you know, I can tell you that that what they did was been done before, and again, you know, nothing ever happened in the past, and those things happen fast. I mean, they you know, you get information fast, and you got to, you know, I remember many times having to get my equipment and drive to Madera and serve a search warrant, and, you know, we had to be there in half an hour and do everything in half an hour. It's just that quick. And this situation, I'm sure that was the game plan, you know, go there, serve the search warrant, get your evidence, and get out. And it just didn't happen that way, and it's unfortunate and sad. But you're right. I mean, it's Mr. Lyles that created that situation. Nothing that Wallenmeyer did wrong or Behar did wrong.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Any questions from the public?
Just some small ones. I was wondering, as we watched the video from that initial video, it's really interesting. Is it normal to set up a video camera before you serve a search warrant? Is that like this is a different world we're living in?
No, that was part of the continuing investigation regarding the arson fires, because it was believed that Mr. Lyles was responsible for the arsons, but no one had ever seen him. And so they set that camera up hoping to capture evidence related to the arsons. And then it just happened to be that this incident happens and the camera has that view. So that's why it was set up, and that was the purpose for that being there.
So that was actually on the store, right?
It was just to the north at the house next door.
And unfortunately, we had hoped to capture something when the shooting happened 3 days prior, but the camera obviously doesn't have a light on it at night. It would kind of defeat the purpose. So nothing had been captured regarding that shooting either, because it was dark. They reviewed the tape hoping to find something related to the shooting, but there was no light, so they couldn't see anything. So, you know, the investigators, they did their homework. This was a case where they didn't have enough to make an arrest. They didn't have enough for prosecution. And they were trying to gather evidence, and that's what they were trying to do that day. It's something, like Councilmember Chavez has said, that's done hundreds of times a year, if not thousands. And unfortunately, in this one incident, Mr. Lyles decided to do what he did, and the end result is what happened.
Are there any other questions from the public?
I believe that the search warrant service initiated at 9:48, yeah, and so about 9:53 is about when the shots fired were reported. So that's when a lot of activity started to kick off. From that point, more resources were showing up at that point. Well, about 9:48 is when they first started knocking on the door. Shots fired were reported about 9:53, so about, you know, a full 5 minutes later. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if this came up in the report, Neil, but one of the things that I noticed when I was out there, I got there, you know, after Behar was shot, was the officers that were around Behar. One of the officers, a CHP officer, Rivera, he was really distraught over that situation, and to the point where he was actually just walking around. They still, Lyles hadn't been confirmed inside, and Rivera was walking around kind of in circles and kind of exposing himself, you know, because of that whole situation. And I know that, I don't know if that came up in the report about what do you do with people that have just witnessed their partner and you know, they're still there. They're still holding the perimeter, and they're still...
Well, there was a lot of trauma, and there was a lot of traumatized cops, and they ended up back at the Tactical Operations Center. And, you know, I apologize for the blood and some of the, you know, crudeness of this, but we wanted to be as honest as possible, and these were the tamest photos we had. Obviously, we're not going to show you anything more than that. It wouldn't be appropriate, but I did want to give you an honest understanding of what was out there that day. So, you know, Councilmember Chavez brings up a good point. There was a number of traumatized cops, because this is pretty unusual. I mean, that sounded like downtown Fallujah or Baghdad. It didn't sound like
outside of Reedley.
Our community.
Yeah. I think another good point on Officer Rivera, I know he's been awarded, you know, the state's highest awards. He saw a fellow officer go down, and he knew he was exposing himself to gunfire. And just like the other officers were there, several Reedley officers, some deputies, they still went into harm's way to get their fellow officer help. There was a lot of that. And I think, you know, we certainly learned some points in dealing with traumatic incidents regarding this incident, but we're also set up well for that. There's certain things that kick into gear once that happens. I know it's the same with the Reedley Police Department, and there are services that are available to the officers, and those services were used. And, you know, it's just, unfortunately, it's just the biggest incident we've had so far. So there were some new areas that were gone through. But,
you know, I did approach the commander, the CHP commander, and mentioned that what was going on with Rivera. But, you mentioned there was a number of officers. I just had Rivera in mind, because I did talk to him out there, and he just was definitely not himself, you know. And you're right. I mean, he did expose himself out there. Anyway, I just wanted to comment about that.
Yeah.
Do you guys use ICS or some kind of other, like, rapidly scalable, like, cross-agency command and control system?
We do use ICS, and that's where Lieutenant Dady and the SWAT team falls under the ICS umbrella, and that's how a large incident like that is managed.
And just for everybody's awareness, ICS means Incident Command System. This is all mandated by federal law. Mm-hmm. The Incident Command System falls under a larger umbrella of the National Incident Management System, or NIMS. Inside of NIMS is SIMS, which is standardized emergency management system, and then below that is the ICS, or incident command system. So I mean, it's obviously the federal government created a lot of regulatory stuff and threw in a bunch of initials with it that you're famous for that. But essentially, on a national level, there's a management system. On a state level, there's a management system. On a local level, there's a management system. If they can break it down in those terms, because that's pretty much what it comes down to. So law enforcement, fire, public safety, we all fall under that umbrella. So we all operate, hopefully, so we're doing things in unison and not doing things separate from each other or without knowledge of, you know, the left hand is doing something the right hand doesn't have awareness.
I'd like to thank you for coming this evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, sir.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment this evening?
Aye, there is.
Would you please state your name and address for our record?
I'm probably infamous at this point. My name is Ronald Pierce. I'm the son of the city clerk in contention. I'm here tonight carrying forward my continued public addressment and challenge to the usurpation of office by certain individuals here. All of my previous comments are carried forward and incorporated herein. I apologize, I have a bit of a cold tonight. I'm going to address some of the comments that were made in the paper. I'm here basically giving a rebuttal. Quote, it's very unfortunate that we're wasting valuable staff time and resources on this, Ziba said. My contract as city manager was approved unanimously by the city council in a very public setting. I am fully seated and fully legal. Just because council ratifies a contract with a potential public employee in a public setting does not mean that particular person has ascended to public office. If this was the case, there would be no need for swearing in. And Article 20, Section 3 of our state constitution would be meaningless. Quote, we have so much to get done right now, and this is taking us off track. It's taking our focus off of the mission of the city in the midst of critical projects and tough decisions. The priorities of city government do not allow for usurpation of office, such as counterproductive, not only to local municipal authority, but also to the greater state of California. All priorities of government business must come second to invasion of public governance by individuals having no legal authority to act. A greater threat overall to the health and safety of the citizenry, the proper functioning of state and municipal government, and the surety of state and local finances. Quote, Ziba said she was recently sworn in by Plata in the city manager's office. We have every belief that everything I have done is valid and within the law, Ziba said. As already stated in previous council meetings before the public and directly challenged beforehand, Sylvia Plata had no authority to swear in Nicole Ziba on a variety of grounds. One, Ziba had already invalidated all further authority to act by exercising color of law authority, which is illegal, before entering office pursuant to constitutional mandate. Two, Plata had no authority to swear in Ziba since Kay Pierce lawfully remains the city clerk. Plata holds no capacity as that office is already occupied. Plata has no authority to swear in anyone since her appointment to acting city clerk was made by Ziba under color of law authority and therefore no authority at all. It is unlawful as well as unconstitutional not to mention illogical, for a person to purportedly terminate a person charged with swearing them in, deputize someone else with that same authority, and then have that person swear them in. That's literally usurpation of office. Quote, Reedley City Attorney Scott Cross said the oath of office for a city employee is required by the Constitution. However, he said it is not required to be performed in a public setting, and a time frame does not exist for taking the oath. And I'm getting these quotes from the paper. That's my source. While the swearing in of an individual into public office does not necessarily need to happen before the public in a literal sense, it still must happen before the public in a documented sense. Therefore, it is still before the public.
Sir, your 3 minutes are up. Could you wind up your comments, please?
Sure. That's probably enough. The rest is basically a discussion of the fact that the law has been broken in this instance. You have someone that, acting as a city manager before swearing in, went and fired people and then was challenged publicly about not swearing in and not being in office and those acts being therefore illegal or without authority. And in response to the challenge, the person then went and swore in private in the office with someone they deputized for it. That's illegal too. And I'm sorry, Mr. Beck, you're still, because of that issue, not properly seated. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment this evening? Would you please state your name and address for our record?
I'm Connie Brooks, and I'm actually doing this for Robert Lewis, so okay. I was going to give his address. Okay. And that's 1438 South Riverview Avenue. And Mr. Lewis has been gave you some things today to look at, the Agenda 21 things. I believe you have a packet of that. So he said his subject is Agenda 21, Dangers to Our Community. I hope you will recognize the subject from previous submissions to you. I continue to be very concerned that Reedley will become involved with programs that are originated under the United Nations related non-government organizations titled Local Governments for Sustainability, or ICLEI, and it's also called Agenda 21. And attached to this memo is a document outlining the goals of Agenda 21, a paper soliciting opposition to it, and two articles from the Fresno Bee that are examples of Agenda 21 models. With every federal government-funded proposals come federal government limitations. And read that as loss of local freedom to act. Let us be alert to only allow proposals that originate with local and state governments where we have some vote in what we will allow. And please prevent this from becoming part of our community. And that's Robert Lewis. And I'll just say a little bit on the, it's a really good article on sustainable development. And it was started in 92, and the Secretary General from that conference said, current lifestyle and consumption patterns of the affluent middle class involving high meat intake, use of fossil fuels, appliances, home and work air conditioning, and suburban housing are not sustainable. And if that doesn't make your hair curl, I don't know what does. And that's the whole goal of it's to get rid of private property, all these things, get rid of fossil fuels, no appliances, no air conditioning. I mean, it's just be sure to look into it. It's a very scary thing. They have the three E's: equity, means to restructure human nature, make it equal justice and inalienable rights to one that implements the concept of social justice only. Economy means shifting from free enterprise to public-private partnership, which is fascism. When the government can pick which businesses succeed, that's fascism. And also on the environment things, it means giving plants, animals, and even inanimate objects equal status or even greater status than the rights of human beings. And I think we've seen that with the little fish in our water. And so I really think you need to really look into this. I think what concerns him most is that you have the 30-year plan going on, and anytime you see sustainable, be a little suspicious, because it's been going on. They're really reaching their goals on getting a lot of this passed, and it's just very, very amazing the things that are going on. I don't know how it's kept under the radar for so long, but anyway, there's a lot of things listed here for YouTube. Be sure you can look at it on YouTube. He gave a thing on the government coming in to help Swearingen and Fresno. That's it's just more government helping you do all these things. The climate conference cuts a deal. I noticed today Canada just pulled out of the climate deal, so they're kind of seeing that the cost of following these things are very, very, very expensive. And I will try to get you all one of these little booklets, because to give you a little, I gave your planner one, and so we will try to get some more information to you. But just be aware, and we can have someone come do a presentation if you'd like further information, because it's very, very serious stuff. So, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment this evening? Would you please state your name and address for the record?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, City Manager. My name is Andrew Shin, 491 South Reed Avenue, and also 1015 G Street. And I'd like to talk about something that's decidedly not serious for a change. I just wanted to give the City Council and our public a little report on the Ladies Night Out event that happened in November. We had a wonderful event. More than 400 ladies attended. And I want to highlight a few things that happened after the event that are particularly interesting in terms of our community's development. We've been engaging more using social media with the people who are shopping, living, and working in downtown Reedley. We've been using our website, reedleydowntown.com. If you haven't seen that, you probably should at some point. We've also been using Facebook as a tool to reach out and communicate with our public. After this most recent Ladies Night Out, we had more than 400 comments on the website. It actually crashed the server, which is what brought it to my attention. So 400 comments and quite a few other people looking. We're seeing attendance from by people who live in the Clovis, Visalia, Selma, Sanger areas. They're starting to think of this event as a reason to come to Reedley, and I think it's giving our downtown just a much-needed cachet boost in terms of shopping, which is great. I love, from an economic development perspective, the idea of people coming to town, spending money here, and then going home before they consume services. we also had 192 people sharing that one post from our website on Facebook, which reached an audience of more than 35,000 people. So I'd love to hear people talking about downtown Reedley as a place to live, shop, and work. So thanks.
Thank you. Any other public comment this evening?
Good evening, council members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Valerie Peroni, Greater Reedley, Chamber of Commerce. Just giving you a quick update on Leadership Reedley. Our last class was outstanding, and I thank Nicole very much for coming in. We sat in your chairs, our class, and we took video of each one of them when they answered questions about being on vacation and what would they like to do. And the purpose of that exercise is to give them the opportunity to impromptu speak, think off the top of their head, and see what it feels like each one of you do. Our speakers that day were Dr. Kathy Ferguson. She is a former Olympic gold medal swimmer. And Supervisor Judy Case came in. And Nicole, of course, spoke. And then Chief Garza came in and gave us a tour of the the police station. Very exciting. Then we got on Reedley Transit, which each person really had never experienced, I included. What a lovely, lovely opportunity and experience. It's a shame that more people aren't taking that transit. It's truly like limousine service when you just call them and they pick me up and take me wherever I want to go. The afternoon was spent at the fire station, where we experienced a lot of commotion that we didn't realize what was going on because there was a couple of calls. And Jerry gave us a nice, wonderful tour. Our assemblyman, Perea, had just arrived the night before from being in Greece, and he graced us by coming out and sharing what's going on in the capital and crazy times that may be. We also had Congressman Nunez's staff come up and speak. And our final speaker, which truly was exciting, was Sheriff Mims. And to our group, to be able to learn firsthand about the marijuana issue in Fresno County, and then a week later looking at her in Washington, D.C., testifying before Congress was just really, truly inspirational. January is going to be another star-studded day. Starting out, we're going to learn everything we can about health care. And the afternoon will be spent about aging population and senior care. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn about Alzheimer's, how are we going to take care of our elderly, what's our hospital and what's going on with the hospital. We've got some dynamic speakers and how air quality is impacting our Central Valley. Mm-hmm. So as we continue to roll out, we thank you again for all your support. You're always welcome. It's the third Wednesday of each month. The class, we have 10 in our class this time, and we will culminate in June, as I had said, and our graduation ceremony will be here at City Hall, and we're working with the Opera House to do our dinner there prior to coming over here, and we'll send an invitation out to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. Any other public comment this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on. The consent agenda. Items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and/or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would any council member like to remove an item from our consent agenda? Is there any public comment on any of these items?
I'd like to remove number four for discussion.
Okay. Removing item number four. Any other item to be removed?
I'll make a motion to approve the rest of the consent agenda.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Chavez?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Item seven. Resolution number item number four, the claim of Natividad Avila Gutierrez.
Yes, this one is she tripped on the sidewalk on G Street. You know, our sidewalks are really bad and they're terrible. They're dangerous. There's one that's really bad on Acacia. It's between North and Myrtle. And the reason I know is when I was walking with my grandkids, there's a big, it's almost a hole there on the sidewalk. It's really, I mean, if you're walking there at nighttime, you can really get hurt. And then there's another one right across the street from the Donut Hut on 11th Street. It's real bad, the sidewalk there. I've walked there before too. And those are just two really bad ones. There's more that I know of, but those two really stand out.
Okay. Thank you for bringing those to our attention. We'll go ahead and have some public works crews go out and check those locations.
Could I follow up on this issue a little bit? You know, we've had these kind of claims in the past, and yet when it's denied, that's the end of it. We do not know what takes place after that, what costs the city or our insurance company. Is it possible that we could get that information brought back to the council?
Yes, sir. In fact, we now have a what's called a dashboard capability with our risk management company, where they keep a running tally, a log of all the claims we've paid out, and they can cross-compare against past years. And you may have seen that dashboard for both workers' comp claims as well as liability claims within the past month. Now that we have that capability, we will on a monthly basis forward those to the council so that you are well aware of what it is that the city has.
And it'd be nice if we could get the notices of the public saying if there's any place in their neighborhood that needs to be brought up to standard, if they could let the city know about it so we can take care of the problems and not have these claims come before us.
Yeah, I absolutely will look into that. I think it's the nature of the beast for public agencies to get trip and fall hazards. Public agencies across the spectrum get them. Trip and fall claims, excuse me. But we'll go ahead and talk amongst our public works crews and department heads to see what we can do.
I've got one question regarding this. Who goes out and investigates these with our department that actually looks at the scene where it occurred?
Russ, can you speak to that?
Yeah, we actually do. When we get the call, a lot of times myself, I go out and take pictures and we measure the crack. In this situation, the street tree on G Street had lifted the sidewalk just adjacent to the tree, and it was about a half inch raise. And so we put a measuring tape by the lift, take pictures.
There was nothing in here other than just a denial, and I don't have anything to go by other than that it's a suggestion. I'd like to kind of look at what the...
It's a routine denial that Lori can make.
I would personally like to have a little something to look at.
Good evening, Lori Oaken, Finance Director. There's actually a third-party insurance investigation. It's Acclimation Insurance Management Services, and the denial basically starts a time clock, a time frame for the claimant to take further action if they want to retain legal services, which this has already been done by this claimant. But it allows a time clock to start. Ames then takes over as the third party. They do all of the investigation. If they find that the city has liability on the claim, then they'll go ahead and take care of settlement with it. Those settlement funds come from our RMA deposit on file. So really what we're doing, we aren't necessarily stating at this point in time that the city has no liability. We're simply starting a time clock and referring it over to a third-party insurance investigator who will then make contact with the claimant, do all the investigative process, take the statements, and decide if there's a legal liability on the part of the city.
Lori, in with the RMA now, is it a $50,000 that we put up every year, or is it?
$50,000 is the self-insured retention level for each claim, so we would be responsible for the first $50,000 on any given claim, and then above and beyond that, if there's settlement or if there's ongoing costs, it comes out of a pooled layer. We share that with many of the Central San Joaquin Valley cities who participate in the...
So $50,000 is used up, we have to replace it.
It's like a deductible. Well, no. Our deposit is probably about $275,000 each year for both the workers' comp side as well as the liability side, and they take that and each year is retrospectively adjusted as we move through the years, and they're able to go back and see what the claims are and what the settlements are. So it's a deposit for that program year, and then they monitor on each claim that comes out.
You know, actually, we just have the two options, is to deny it and then have it run its course or to approve it. And, of course, not having the information to approve it, I think it's best to deny it now and just push it forward.
Correct. Deny it and then turn it over to Ames, who will do a subsequent investigation and decide if there's liability on the part of the city.
Okay.
Is it feasible to say what has it cost us in the last 10 years?
We can definitely get you...
Claims and... That were against the city?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get you all the information on that. Like I said, now that we have the dashboard capability from the risk management company, we can pull that data for you and distribute it to all the council members. So.
Thank you.
That'll also include any frivolous claims too, I guess? It'll include them all, right?
Right. We'll include all the claims we received, claims we've denied, claims we've approved, dollar amounts, and then whether they've been litigated or not. Okay. And if they've been litigated, how much we've paid out.
Yeah. Picture on this thing.
Good discussion. Any public comment on this issue? May I
move to approve number 4?
Second.
Okay, so are we moving to deny the claim?
Yes.
Okay. Call for the question.
apologize. The first was?
Salino.
Salino. Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. Item 7, a resolution number 2011-080, a resolution awarding a construction contract to Johnson Drilling Company for the City of Reedley test well at the Sports Park project. Mr. Martinez.
Yes, Noah Martinez, City Engineer. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. With this item, staff recommends that City Council adopt resolution 2011-080 awarding the construction contract for the City of Reedley Test Well at Sports Park project to the lowest responsible bidder, Johnson Drilling Company. To give you some quick background on this project, on November 18, 2011, the bid for the Test Well project was advertised by city staff in addition to contacting directly prospective bidders performing this type of work. Now, on December 6, 2011, city staff conducted a bid opening with only one bid received, open and read out loud. The bid received was for the amount of $70,550 from Johnson Drilling Company. The bid price was a little higher than the engineer's estimate of $59,000. Now, having determined that Johnson Drilling is a qualified contractor, staff recommends awarding the contract to Johnson Drilling Company in the amount of $7,550. Now, to finish, it is estimated that the total construction cost for the test well at the Sports Park project, which includes the above stated construction contract plus contingency and construction engineering, shall not exceed $81,180 and shall be fully funded from the city's 2007 water bond proceeds. With this, I will answer any questions you may have on this project.
Are there any questions from the council?
And you stated that item number 2 was underestimated?
Yes.
And is it different than any other well that we've done before and testing that you estimated with so much difference?
No, it's typical. This is a typical test well that we've done in the past. The last one we did was back in 2006, I believe, well 13. Uh-huh. And it's just, I guess for lack of a better word, the nature of the beast that we estimate a project based on past experience, past projects, and it's up to the contractor to submit their price, and they have their own reasoning for submitting their own price. So that was the variance there.
Okay.
Are there any other questions of the council? Are there any questions from the public on this issue? Seeing none, what is the council's pleasure?
Move to approve resolution 2011-080.
I second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. Item 8, approval production contract with Today in America for production and national airing of a televised segment on Reedley. City Manager.
Madam Mayor, members of council, we have a very interesting opportunity that has come our way within the past week or two. We were contacted by a senior producer from Today in America, and that is a nationally televised show hosted by Terry Bradshaw. They are putting together a segment for national CNN headline news called Hidden Gems in America to Live, Work, and Play. And they came across Reedley, actually came across our motto, the World's Fruit Basket, thought that was interesting, and called to learn a little bit more about Reedley. After having a conversation with them, they expressed interest in coming and doing a segment that will be about 5 minutes long. They will bring film crews out. They want to capture the essence of Reedley, the quality of life, the amenities we have. And the contract for that is about $20,000. It's 19 and change. It pays for the film crews to come out. That price, though, that fee does give us the rights and licensing to use that segment as we determine. So in essence, we're buying this segment, which we can then turn around and use for economic development opportunities, tourism opportunities. We will own that segment. This is a really interesting opportunity that cities around us will not have. We did reach out to some of our community partners who have graciously agreed to help us fund this. So the Chamber, Reedley College, Kings Canyon Unified, those are three that have already said they would help us fund this. Emmanuel Schools is also looking to step up and help us. And then we will go after a few others, like the hospital, et cetera. So we're looking to minimize the city's fee for this to be no more than $10,000. We do have some funds available to cover this. And so if, in fact, it's the council's desire, we would request approval of the production contract with Today in America.
Are there any questions from the council?
Yeah, actually, okay. I do. Thank you for calling me about this late last week about this situation. I didn't realize it was going to cost us $20,000 to do this. I do have some concerns with that money. First thing that comes to mind is, you know, they're going to air this. Why are they charging us to air it? Is this the best way to spend $20,000 in our time, in this particular time? We've had that report that we did a few years ago that supposedly was going to make us marketable to a number of businesses, and I don't know if that's where that's at right now. So as one council member, I'm going to be real hesitant to spend $20,000 right now. And as I look at this with all these partners, is how much of that 5 minutes is going to go toward the partners as opposed to the city? Reedley College, yeah, we're all in this community, but is this the best way to spend $20,000 of city funds?
It is a good question. And in fact, it's a question that I've been mulling over since the opportunity came our way. And the way that I finally came to look at this, first of all, Today in America is a broadcast show that is sold to cable networks and different networks. It'll be aired once nationally on CNN Headline News, and it'll be aired 19 times in regional markets, both East Coast and West Coast. So I do want to point out it's more than just one airing. However, the way that I finally came to rest on this issue was, it's not so much the airing that I think is important. The opportunity to catch one show is, 50-50 chance you're going to be sitting in front of the TV. What caught my attention was we will then own a professionally produced segment to use, and I'm glad you brought up the Buxton Report, because together it makes a very powerful economic development story. And we are, in fact, using the Buxton Report. What I'd like to do, since you brought that up, is probably provide a memo to the council on where we are with that. We've had several conversations with Buxton recently about some opportunities that we may have with companies. And in fact, they're doing some studies with the data they developed to help us. We had a national chain come look at us and then ultimately turn us down. And we're now coming back with the data from that report to say we do have the demographics to support this national chain. In fact, if we had a professionally produced television segment along with the data to say, here's the data to say we can support you, and by the way, watch this 5-minute segment on the quality of life and just what Reedley has to offer. So I ultimately came to the decision that $20,000 may be a good investment if we're really going to be serious about economic development and show what Reedley has to offer.
Could we, for that $20,000 or even less, could we get somebody to put that piece together for us so that we could market it instead of maybe somebody locally that we could, spend the money locally with?
We talked about that, some of the partners and I. In fact, Dr. Capet from Reedley College initially said, wow, we can probably have some students put it together. But even he has come around full circle. Today we were having lunch in executive committee, and he said to have a professionally produced segment lends credibility. To be able to say, here's Reedley, and it was shown on a national scale, lends credibility as opposed to students putting together a segment. I think these are valid concerns, though, and so this is a good conversation.
Again, to be quite frank, I never had heard of Today in America until we talked about it. Maybe I'm the only one in this room that's never heard of Today in America. But I'm just, you know, those concerns I'm expressing as one council member, because $20,000, I think we could, last summer we could have really used it to save some services.
I also are very hesitant and don't feel right, because we just got through our budget barely by the skin of our teeth. And I don't know how many times we asked the department heads to go back and cut more. Go back and cut a little bit more. I don't know how many times we asked them that they needed to cut back on. And I think, you know, the one that was really worried with the police department, but we asked them to do that, and they faithfully did it, and they did a good job. And for us to turn around, and this is 20,000. We did this, I don't know how many years ago, they did a video on Reedley, and they had a group, professional group, come in and tape, and they have a video, and I don't know how much it cost. I really don't know. This has been years ago, several years ago, and nothing ever came of it. Nothing. Do you still have copies of that? I wonder, does anybody have copies of that? Yeah, and nothing ever became of it. And so, and then also we put.
It is on the website.
Okay. Well, then see, we do have something, and I don't know how much money was spent on it, but, and then the Bucksman too. We put a lot of money into the Bucksman, and that's a lot of money that came into that. Mm-hmm. And then if the chamber's willing to help us donate, we give the chamber money. We gave you money. And then you can turn around and help us after we've given you money, and you come back and ask for, like, the banners, you don't want to pay a fee, and all these things that you're asking us to help you with, and yet you're going to help us with this. So I really, and then on here you have also that we do have 20,000 that we haven't used for our consultant writing retainer. That was 20, that's in the budget. That I think should be used for an emergency. I mean, something that comes up where it's going to have to, we have to use it for something. And I just feel that it's too much money. And maybe it's not a lot of money, but what we went through with the budget and how we asked them to go back and be really picky and picky and picky, to me it is. We still don't know what the budget is going to be for this year.
No, that's correct.
Well, folks, I'm going to have to disagree with both of you, because the economy, we're just sitting still. We're doing nothing right now. This is an opportunity to get different agencies that are going to go together. It's not going to cost the city $20,000. It's going to cost half that much, because the other agencies are going to be donating and put it into the pot. We need to publicize this community. We're sitting here doing nothing. And we need to say, listen, folks, Reedley is willing to offer you something if you look at us. And we've got some projects right now. Look at the bus program that the city manager is looking at. Here we have an agency that's willing to come to the West Coast and look at the city of Reedley. If we can put together a package that they're willing to look at the city of Reedley. And we're hoping that can happen.
They're only willing to come for $20,000.
This is a plus for the city of Reedley. Don't sit back and ignore anything that could be possible.
I'm just saying.
But that you're looking now, at, it's not $20,000, it's only $10,000, okay?
How much do we give the chamber every year?
That doesn't make a difference.
Yes, it does, because we give them money, and now they're going to turn around and give us money.
It doesn't
make sense. It's still coming, and it's still be coming from us. Honestly, I don't mean, but I just feel with what we've been through with this budget, it's, and what we asked our employees to go through, and what we all went through, trying to get it passed, I want to keep it for an emergency.
We're trying to attract business into the city of Reedley.
Well, we...
Don't hide.
I'm not
Don't
hiding.
Hide.
If we have another Walmart want to come in, are they going to accept that?
You have an opportunity to promote the city of Reedley.
But look what happened. They're picky about what comes in. We had a chance to have Walmart. Are those same people going to come back to us and say that there's something that comes in here that they don't like?
That's a dead issue now, okay?
Let's go forward
yes, and try and promote something else.
But now how do we go forward from here?
Oh, yeah, we do go forward, but no,
How do we promote what we have here? We have an opportunity, I think, to share the good about Reedley, to share the unique things. You know, that we do have a college. We do have a lot of recreation right here around us and within, you know, an hour's driving distance from here, and this can be a spinoff to be a promotion for our city to attract somebody to come here to get sales tax revenue so we can fund programs that are here at our city.
And we can't use the old video?
Are there any other comments from the council?
I've only got a couple of things that it's a little bit confusing to me when a large production outfit like this is charging us. I'm kind of like on the same boat with Pete. I know you have to spend in order to do certain things. I'm a little concerned what we're going to get out of the people. Is there any way we can find out how much is going to be coming in before we make a final decision on this so that we... Well, you're saying that we can get help from several college. You're talking about getting help from the Chamber of Commerce, which I kind of we do fund the chamber. But you also have you said Emmanuel Academy may come on board. How much are we looking at? Can we get some kind of a figure?
Yeah, my estimate in the staff report is that I think the city will be spending approximately $10,000.
But, I mean, do we have a deadline on this to meet? I mean, is there telling us we have to make this decision within 30 days or 5 days? Or?
Well, in fact, they are, the mayor and I participated in a conference call with a couple of senior producers, and they are looking to finalize which cities will be in this segment by the end of December, and then they will film 75 to 90 days, I believe they said, from there. We're actually hoping for more of the latter because we'd like them to come when the blossoms are going and the city looks pretty and there's tourism. So, but I think it's a very relevant conversation. And in fact, again, I wrestled with it myself because this is not, if you have an ABC News channel come in, they're not charging you, obviously. They're going to come, they're going to film you get on ABC News, etc. I struggled with it because it is a fee, and that's when I finally came to realize it's buying the product. It's buying that segment that is the credibility of a Terry Bradshaw that's hosting it, et cetera, that we can then send. So I think these are very relevant points that each and every one of you have brought up. And in fact, it's a difficult decision because of the economic time we're in right now, because of the budget situation. It's a very relevant conversation.
To me, it comes down to advertising, and you know, we're taking $20,000 to advertise here, and you know, is this our only option? Sounds to me like we got this one option to spend $20,000. If we had 10 options available to us, hey, there's 9 other options you can look at to spend $20,000, but just looking at this on the surface, you know, somebody charging us to come in here and to film and I mean, again, I'd never heard of this show, and you know, I don't know how many people in Reedley are going to watch it or how many people in the nation are going to watch it, and it sounds to me like they use a lot of contractors. You know, I guess is this a company that where these people actually work for them, or they have independent contractors that come out here and film and then sell the film to these cable companies, or what is what's all involved here? I look at this thing and I'm going, you know, there's, why do they need to be paid to fly out here? And why, they can't meet payroll? What is it?
Because this is a separate company that produces these segments and then sells these segments to channel providers. Most of their channels are on the East Coast and in the South, and they do have a West Coast presence in Sacramento, which is probably why we haven't seen them here. To me, that's actually a good thing. We don't need people in Reedley to see Reedley. I mean, we do, but we can do that ourselves. We need people outside Reedley to come so that, in fact, we get the tourism, so, in fact, we get the businesses coming in, et cetera. But, again, this is a different business model that we're not used to. And, in fact, when I first got the call, I was skeptical, and I called the Fresno County Film Commission and talked to them, and they did tell me this is a legit corporation, and they exist by producing segments that then they sell, and they sell to CNN and different Fox business networks.
How are we going to know that they showed the 20 segments if they're all going to be shown on the East Coast?
Well, it'll be once nationally as well. And so in the production contract that we have here, it states that we'll be guaranteed to be given the times, dates, and channels that it'll be shown on. So we will have a guarantee that it will be shown. But again, I don't know that the showing, the airing of this is going to bring businesses. It's really that we can then use the product to package, to sell Reedley to businesses. And actually... there's a couple of businesses, again, a national chain, for instance. We don't want to say right now who they are, but they just last week told us they didn't think we had the demographics to support them. And now we can come back with the Buxton study. They're putting the demographic data together for us. With the report, they're repackaging it for this particular national chain so that we can provide it to them. And it would be an add-on to there.
You know, we have, we're promoting the Reedley College, we're promoting Downtown Association, we're building a sports park that when it's completed, we're going to promote that thing to bring in big sport events to this community, which is going to be beneficial. You know, we've got the transportation department with the school district. That's another one that we can promote. You know, we have things that it's sitting here, but only we know about it. We're not promoting outside the city of Reedley. And this is what the problem is. We need to get off our horses and let's promote the city of Reedley the way we should. Don't just sit on it.
Let me just say this. If do we think this is the only avenue to promote our city would be to spend these $20,000 and do it this way? Or is there other options out there? You know, it just seems to me this one has a lot of questions, at least in my mind.
The thing I like about it is that it's just not the city of Reedley that's doing this. It's a joint venture between different agencies. It's like we're doing with this transportation department with the school district. That is going to be a beneficial agency for both the city and the school district. Mm-hmm. Let's take advantage of it, but if we just sit on it and know about it ourselves, it's not going to do anything good about it. We need to spread our wings and let everybody else outside of Reedley know what we have. It's not $20,000 that we're going to spend on Reedley. It's $20,000 that's going to be a joint venture between different agencies.
You don't think those same agencies would sign up with us if we looked at other ways to spend that money instead of just spending it on this?
My concern right now, if the economy changes, do we wait till the economy changes and start going forward, then we start promoting ourselves, or do we promote ourselves before the economy changes? And we're ready to deal with it when it changes?
I think that's a great question. And personally, I wish this opportunity had come up in a year from now and not now, when we were a little bit more settled financially. We hadn't just gone through these cuts. I don't believe this opportunity will be here a year from now. That doesn't mean we go for it now, however. Are there other ways? I did want to address that, other ways. And this is other ways to promote ourselves. And yes, absolutely, there are other ways. And we're going to do as many as we possibly can. We need to do as many as we possibly can.
Is there any public comment on this issue? Would you please come up?
Valerie Prony, Greater Reedley, Chamber of Commerce. And first, Anita, I want to say that we are very humble when the city has funded the chamber. And part of our vision is to help build a better community, which where we're competing with hundreds and thousands of cities throughout the nation who have very slick walking pieces for that and inviting people to the community, of which we don't have. We have some great assets here that everyone in this room knows all about, but people in Fresno don't know. The buses that are coming out of Los Angeles, taking hundreds of tourists all summer up to the Sequoias, don't know that Reedley exists. I can call them and I can tell them all about us, but if I had a 5-minute slick video that I can, well, video's outdated, shows my age, that I can share with them and say, look at this. This is, here's the river. It's the pieces that were done in the past, which the chamber has, are very outdated. There are, this message is targeted very differently. It is not a targeted message that's going to say, oh, this is the great thing that's happening at the college, or this is the wonder thing about the schools. It's going to have a different vision that is truly a marketing piece. Once we have that document done first class, and yes, we could probably look other areas, but sometimes you look at these opportunities and you say, do we jump on board? We financially don't really have a lot. That's why when Nicole discussed this with me, I said we need to find partners. There's some more affluent partners in the community that are there at the table that can help us and share this responsibility burden as we all are trying to bring more economic development into the community. One suggestion I had for her, too, is we can take these people's. I'm on Comcast all the time. They're always inviting me to do these shameless plugs. I don't have Comcast, so I don't get to see myself, fortunately. But we can share these with all the cable stations because they all have a duty, and they're always looking for public service announcements. We're able to give them this piece, and I would say in my last 2 years that I've been here, Reedley is becoming on the mark. I was always teasing Channel 30, Angelo, that you never talk about Reedley's weather. We have weather. If you notice, we're now starting to get our weather as being noticed. It's every piece of every pie, and we need to really promote that pie, not a piece here that we got a great downtown, or we've got a nice school, or we've got an aviation program at the college. We have an entire package, including an incredible city council that is very supportive of this community, a hospital that you're proud to take someone to because it's one of a multi-billion dollar operation. Those are the kinds of things that we need to now promote that we're not. And individually, we can't do that. I don't have those resources. I have the responsibility, I feel, but I don't have that resource. And I need to develop partners with me. And it's great that Nicole says, let's bring this all as a partnership together. And I would encourage you to really think about it. These opportunities don't always come down our pike, but we need to cross that barrier. And I understand it's very hard to look at someone and say, you know, we're going to give $10,000 more out of our city budget in order to help promote. But if we're able to land some businesses that we can go shopping at Christmas time, or I can go and buy clothes for my children, that's what's incredibly important in the bigger picture. And I think that's what we're trying to do here. Thank you.
Yes, I think this is a very exciting opportunity. Also, I hate to see the downtown kind of dying. It's looking really sad down there. And I think with a little, if we could get another business, you would pay for that in a couple months of taxes that you'd get for sales taxes and things like that. And I see Sanger growing. I see Dinuba growing. And I think they're being real business friendly. I think we need to get more business friendly. I know in Dinuba, just to get that
theater, they volunteered to do the landscaping for them. All the other businesses had a fit, I guess, but they did it, and then the other businesses are flourishing because they made the commitment to do that. And so you have to look at the bigger picture a lot of times. You know, you might cost you a little bit, but you're going to make a lot of money. And so I just think it's a very good idea. So thank you.
Thank you, Connie.
I'm Fred Hall. I'm with the Reedley Exponent. Pete, I have to join you in saying that I've never heard of Today in America. I don't know who the production company is. I know, having lived coast to coast and spent my whole life in this business, that the country is full of these nomad production companies. They roam around, they sell these. And I'll tell you right now, if you move ahead with it, and the $25,000 production is worth the money to you, then it's a good decision. That's what you have to be comfortable with. Because you're looking at here, they're going to give you national airing of this television commercial. Terry Bradshaw, is Terry Bradshaw the old quarterback? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Maybe a few people my age will remember who he is. So. But the thing about it, when you look at these things, and they talk about airing these, you've got to go way beneath that. You've got to look at the day part that they're going to air those in, what show it's going to be on, what the ratings are going to be. And if they're charging you to do it, and I don't want to be a crotchety old man about it, but I just be comfortable with that 25. If you're willing to spend that in promoting the community, wonderful. And maybe these guys are good people to do it. I don't know. I don't know anything about them. Never heard of them. But make damn sure that you know what you're getting into. Don't expect anything from them. They ask you to front $25,000 to come out here. That's to pay their expenses. And they try to sell this. They're making money coming out of this somewhere. It may be a great deal for you, but go at it with an open mind. Okay? These people are nomads. They're all over the country. They sell these directories. All of you have businesses here. You've had them come through. They're selling some kind of directory or map or something. And they're like locusts. They come in, they do it, they take the money, and they're gone. So delve deeply into it. Don't expect anything from the television airing. If you can use it, and you've got a marketing plan for it, then it's wonderful. Thank you. I hate to be this way, but thanks.
Thank you for your comments.
Good evening, Council and City Mayor, Manager. My name is Dawn Barcellas, 1892 North Thompson. My husband and I have owned Valentino's for 18 years, and as a business owner who employs 9 people, I want you to know, if we don't start looking out for Reedley, who are we going to expect to do so? If we could possibly get other people in other communities to see what all of us know, I think it's of huge benefit. And I totally understand people who are in supervisory spots who have had to give and give and give and figure things out. As a business owner, I'm in the very same spot. We've been downtown for 8 years, and things are tough. But I need more people who do not have a lower median income to come into my business. Do I have a dollar menu? No. I need some visibility. And this, I believe, in partnering with economic development in many different facets, this, I believe, is one of those things that, no, we don't want to take $20,000 out and make our public disgruntled. I do think that there should be more people on board to maybe make it definitely to where you only have to come up with 10. And those people that put money in, they help you market it as well. I would love to be that. Valentino's will put in 500. Absolutely. This is an important thing. And that's a tough 500 to give, but I'm there. Because without it, as I look forward, 4 years, which puts us into another different spot, just like businesses every 4 years. We're in a really bad spot. So it doesn't matter really where I get it, just that I have it for that. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Don.
Mayor, City Council, City Manager, Andrew Shin, 491 South 3rd Avenue and 1015 G Street. I've worked with a few of these production companies in my previous job as a media relations specialist for the U.S. Coast Guard. And the business model is familiar. Small production company. They typically hire contractors, and they are trying to move these to their customer, who's the networks or the cable channels. In media production, $20,000 is not a whole lot of money, and it seems like a pretty low price for something like this. I'm assuming that we're helping subsidize and we're not paying for the production itself, because that would cost a lot more money. So somebody's probably charging, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 just to edit this video. However, I am with Councilman Chavez in wanting to see this one piece set within a larger economic development framework. I think it's probably money well spent, but I would like to see it be money that's intentionally spent. I think if we take a step back, maybe this is an opportunity we pursue this time. But I'd like to take a step back and make a plan that's going to span multi years. Consider who we want to reach and what channels we want to reach them, and then take a look at this opportunity with that pre-considered framework in mind. I think we'll probably have a basis for making a better decision on this. Thank you.
Any other public comment? None. Any other comments from the council?
No.
May I entertain a motion?
I would make a motion to go with the plan.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
No.
Councilmember Chavez?
No.
Mayor Fast?
Yes. Moving on to item 9 is the committee and board appointments replacing former city council member Steve Rapata as the City of Reedley representative, an appointment of a vacant position as alternate member to the Five Cities Board. City Manager?
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, members of council, when Mr. Rapata left the council, we discovered he sat on an awful lot of committees. Those which he was a primary member that meet very, very frequently, we did appoint, you may recall. We now have members to those. We did hold off in bringing a few of these forward until we had a full council seated. But in fact, we're now at a place where we need to find primary and alternate appointments for several of the committees that he sat on. Those are listed here on your agenda and in your staff report. And so staff's desire today is to select a council member for each one of these and approve the council.
So how do we go about this?
Well, I would suggest we go down the line A, B, C, D, E, and see if there's any interest in these different committees. So for instance, the Five Cities board member, right now we're actually looking for a primary and an alternate on that JPA that we have.
And that meeting meets in the evenings, is that correct, Sylvia, from your?
Yes, I provided some information on each one of them, including the hours of the meetings, the highlighted area. Five Cities board meeting meets for the 2012 meeting will be held in Sanger, who is the hosting city, and it is at 6:00 p.m.
Okay.
It meets March, June, September, and in December, and is needed to appoint, and we do need to appoint a primary and an alternate.
Would there be any council person willing to sit on this board?
I'll be the alternate. I'm going to I've got the primary on the Central Valley Transportation, so I can take the alternate on the five cities.
I'd be interested maybe in doing the primary.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would be interested? Okay.
Okay.
Do we need to motion those or just accept
Well, volunteers? We could do a motion for each individual committee, and it's really up to you as mayor.
I think let's go on through the rest of them, and we'll do it all as one vote. Is that okay?
Good. Okay, the Upper Kings River Water Authority, this is for a primary appointment.
And this is a meeting that's usually held, looks like once a quarter, and is usually during the day at 9:30 in the morning.
That'd be a little tough for me.
Come on, Anita, take it.
I'm the alternate.
I would be interested in doing this. Are you an alternate?
Uh-huh.
So we could share in it?
I'm the alternate.
Probably go in the summer months, do the July and October. But I don't know about January and April.
You want to share it?
Sure.
You'll be the one.
I'll
stay the alternate.
Okay. Anyone else interested in that? The Upper Kings River Water Authority? Okay.
We have an alternate appointment for the Fresno County Council of Governments. That's the COG. Mayor, as you know, you are the primary appointment to that joint powers agreement or authority. So we're looking for the alternate.
You interested in that one?
Yeah, I'll take that alternate there.
Okay. Anyone else interested in that?
Okay, the next appointment is for an alternate to the San Joaquin Valley Special City Selection Committee. It's an unusual sort of committee. They're called as needed, so we don't know exactly how frequently you'll be called. But this committee is charged with making appointments of city representatives to the Air Pollution Control District Governing Board, and in fact, very recently met.
Voted on four. Appointed four.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the primary on that one.
What time do they meet?
They meet in the evening.
Okay.
So that would be for the alternate then if you couldn't go. Mm-hmm. Okay. Would anyone like to volunteer for that?
I'll do that one.
Right? Okay, good.
Okay, and the last one is for the Central Valley Transportation Center, and this is for an alternate. This is the Joint Powers Authority that will govern the construction and management agreements for the Central Valley Transportation Center. That's the joint project with Kings Canyon Unified. I don't envision that this committee is going to see a lot of action while the staff is doing our hard work to try and get the funds to actually build this. But in fact, we are looking for an alternate. Mr. Chavez is the primary member.
I'll take a shot at it.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would be interested in that? Being the alternate? No? Okay. Well, it looks like we have a full slate, so may I?
The only other agency is the South Regional Solid Waste Commission, that I'm the primary, and we meet only as needed. And this has been going on for years because we take care of the landfills. Mm-hmm. But since Dynab Avenue has closed their landfills, then we take our refuse outside it. And I'm the only primary. There's no alternate in that one.
Our alternate for that agency is Councilmember Chavez.
Oh, he is. Oh, okay.
Very honest.
Okay, that's good. Can I entertain a motion to approve the selection of Bob Beck as the primary for the Five Cities board member and Pete Chavez as the alternate? The Upper Kings River Water Authority, the primary will be myself. And the Fresno County Council Government's alternate would be Pete Chavez. The San Joaquin Valley City Selection Committee alternate would be Ray Salano. And the Central Valley Transportation Center alternate would be Bob Beck. May I entertain a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Salino.
Yes.
Councilmember Beck.
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt.
Yes.
Councilmember Chavez.
Yes.
Mayor Fast.
Yes. Great. Item 10, council reports. Let's see. Let's start with Mr. Chavez.
I don't have anything to report today. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Beck?
I don't have anything at this time.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
No, nothing at this time.
Oh,
Mr.
I
Salino.
To Mr. Robinson, I'd like to, your solar signal light on, is it 10th?
And Reed.
10th and Reed is out. It's been out for quite some time.
The northbound or southbound?
Northbound.
It's a solar light? It was repaired, and I saw it working the other night. Is it out again recently?
It wasn't tonight when I drove by there. The one going south, that was out, and you repaired that one. But the one going north, it's not working. Oops. And we're having large trucks go through Reed now. The other thing that I'd like to bring up is the speed in certain streets, and I know that we went through the speed limits a while back, and the one that still bothers me is the one where it says where 85% of the percentile or that exceed the speed in certain streets, you can't use your radar. Isn't that right? That's the way it was written, and I brought up that thing. The question.
I think he's speaking about the speed survey that we did a couple of months ago.
Yes, and to clarify, the 85th percentile measurement, that was used as part of the study to determine the posted limits that we have right now in the city. So whatever the limit is right now, it should be obeyed and should be enforceable. And the 85th percentile was the measure that we used to determine the posted speeds that we have right now.
But it said that you couldn't use radar on those streets. That's the way it was written, and I questioned it that night. That you couldn't use radar on those streets for people that exceeded the 85th percentile.
Okay. And I tried to explain this last time. What we did is when we did the measurement, in order to come up with the, in order to complete the study, we did a measurement. We did measurements of different streets, and what we did in the study was that okay, let's figure out what the speeds are within those measurements, and whatever was 85th or whatever speed was measured at the 85th percentile. If the existing speed was lower than that, we needed to raise that speed to the actual 85th percentile measurement, and that's the one that would be posted. So the 85th percentile measurement was the measure that we used to come up with the posted speed limits that we have right now, which are fully enforceable.
Brought that paper. Because we're having
confusing.
It is confusing.
Yeah.
But the problem that I have is that some of these major streets, the speed is very, people are really getting ridiculous.
If there's concerns, we can have PD go out there and enforce the limit. Now, where it's going to come into play, the limit that we came up with the study is, the city is whoever gets cited for speeding, they can they have the right to protest. If they get cited, they have the right to go to court and protest that citation. But what we did is on the study, in the locations that we couldn't justify the posted limit based on the 85th percentile. We, and the study, we said there is particular reasons why you need to drive at this speed, and that's going to be our justification in front of the judge if we have to go out and defend our posted limit.
But when you use a radar, there's no challenge on it. Isn't that correct?
No, there is a challenge. You can still challenge the use of the radar, obviously because of calibration, et cetera, et cetera. Right. The 85th percentile, what that allows for the officers to do is to sight based off of the 85th percentile, meaning that if the 85th percentile says that the normal flow of traffic is going to be 37 miles, then we can start sighting at 37 miles if it's at a 35. Normally, we try to give people at least a 10-mile buffer. That's kind of the rule. But also, the vehicle code also regulates that certain streets that are of a certain width have to be surveyed by radar or by a traffic count and the 85th determined in order for us to enforce it with radar. So if it's not surveyed, for instance, Olson Avenue by the mobile home park for the longest time was not a location where we could utilize the radar because it was of a certain width and it required a survey to be done before we could do it. And that is something that is required. It is required every 5 years to be done, so that we are current with the safe. Obviously, if it's prima facie speed. Your residentials, which is 25 miles an hour, those we don't need the survey done. Those we can automatically do. School zones, et cetera.
Okay, so High Street, what is High Street, 40 miles an hour?
That's 30.
And when they're going 45 and 50?
That's easy pickings right there.
And that occurs daily?
Yes.
Constantly. Let me ask another question to the finance director. When a ticket is issued, what percentage of that revenue comes back to the city?
Very, very small.
Very little.
It's like almost 7%.
Really?
Yeah.
So people out there are saying, you see people constantly speeding, and it's getting ridiculous. And because we only get a percentage of that ticket back, is it worthwhile for us to take time and give out tickets?
Well, from the police department perspective, it's very important because obviously it's safety. There's always three that they call the three E's to traffic. To traffic, it's education, enforcement, and engineering. Those are always the things that we have to look at, and it's very key. We can only get the education out to our community, in so many ways, but it takes the enforcement in order to drive the point home,
right,
that they can't be driving while on their cell phone, they can't be speeding, they can't be doing, ignoring people in crosswalks, etc. So it is very important that we do go out and do the enforcement. Even though the return is very, very little, we understand that and we see that, but the enforcement is very key for safety.
So, Chief, since we've heard that I Street is now something that is on the council's mind, can you return to your folks and put a strategy in place for some?
Absolutely. That is something we can do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. No, that's all.
Okay. I have a whole slug of stuff I went to. We had almost a month break here.
Yes.
So we've all been busy. I attended the senior night at Reedley College for the girls volleyball team. And also a Reedley College Business Advisory Committee meeting. Probably regarding more my work side than being the mayor here, but I found at that meeting that the college is really interested in getting students to do volunteer experience work in our local businesses. And so if any of you are interested, Dean Gray would be the contact person there, and I have a phone number I can leave with Sylvia if But in the past, I've had students work under me in the places that I've worked, and they really learn a lot and gives them an opportunity to do something good back in our community. And I think it's an important learning tool that we as maybe some older folks can help to train our young people. Another thing that they're interested in doing is that they want to have a Reedley College business conference in the spring, similar to what's done down in Bakersfield, and I think Fresno Pacific and Fresno State both do a business conference. So that's something they're looking to do, and I recommended that they talk to you and that they talk to you, Valerie, so you may get phone calls. They also are looking for input specifically in their business department of what education is needed by our local businesses and establishments to make the employees that we do have more productive and to be better educated in what they're doing. So if you have recommendations in any of those areas, that might be something you might want to also contact Dean on. Also attended the Council of Governments meeting. Couple of transportation items. We approved the issuing of the formal call for projects, which we actually approved this evening for the regional surface transportation program and the congestion mitigation and air quality improvement programs that will be available to the cities of our county. Also approved the COG director to approve a enter a contract with a URS corporation on behalf of our eight valley regional planning agencies to provide consultant services to the communities under 50,000 population for planning activities relating to integrating the blueprint and the smart growth principles. So that was also approved. Another item that I think maybe not direct interest to Reedley, but in the past they did the San Joaquin Railroad business plan on the east side, which directly involved the railroad that goes through Reedley. But they now tied that in with the west side business plan and gave a demonstration of what activity is being done on those railroads and how we can work together to make sure that those railroads stay where they're at and that they do not get pulled up. And a copy of that presentation is available on the website at FresnoCog.org if anyone's interested. But it's a very interesting proposal and very well done and simply done so that we can understand, you know, what is being hauled by rail in our county and what's the best way to keep that infrastructure and operation working. They also had a farmland conservation study that was done by Dr. Gary Manrose from Strategy Research Institute, and he conducted a research project on a farmland conservation in Fresno County and trying to figure out if the people of the county would be willing to basically put up money as the economy has gone down, that would not be a feasible option at this point for people in the county to put up money to conserve our farmland. So that was a report that was submitted, but probably will not be feasible at this point. And that's about all our board actions there. Also, I attended a reception in Fresno for Congressman Devin Nunes, and he discussed the economy and his struggle with many of the budget issues that have come up in the last probably 6 to 9 months. He is quite frustrated, but still very positive of things that can be done to make our economy turn around again. Also went to the Christmas tree lighting put on by the Downtown Association, and I thought there was a larger group this year because they included the St. LaSalle Children's Choir, and a lot of the families came with them to watch them sing downtown, and I think that was a good way to bring people. I had many people say, I've never come to this before, and this was really neat, and we want to do this again and tell our friends, so that was a good thing that was done. Also, the Farm Equipment Light Parade was the first, and that was also I thought the idea to have it a little bit later in the evening was good. Whoever came up with that idea, I don't know. But I think it gave an opportunity for people to shop downtown and, you know, just generally socialize and make it a fun, eventful evening. Also attended the fire department Christmas party, and always great food and a fun evening with that department. And it was good to honor the employees that had excelled this last year. So also received a paper about the Hope Now for Youth banquet that's going to be held on February the 23rd. And usually our city has gone to this banquet and helped to support that. So I'll, Sylvia, I'll give this to you, and maybe you can work on that. And that's all that I have. Staff reports.
Thank you, Council. A couple of key dates I want to bring to your attention. On December 19th and 20th, we will be holding public workshops for the sewer rate increases. We did send out public notice, and now we're going to hold some workshops for the public. They can come and get some overview of what we're doing, and then they can spend some time getting some individualized help from our departments. You'll notice we're doing one at 11 a.m. for folks who can only come out in the morning, and then we're doing one at 6:30 p.m. at the community center for folks who can only come out in the evening. So we are advertising those workshops in the Exponent and in the chamber newsletter, and doing a phone call out so that folks know. The idea is we want to make ourselves as available as possible to the public to help them understand this issue. So again, that's the 19th and the 20th. I do want to point out that December 27th, we are dark. There is no council meeting. So our next council meeting together will be January 9th. January 10th is our regular council meeting, but the 9th is the Proposition 218 protest hearing for the sewer rate. So that will be the 9th, a Monday, with a regular council meeting on the 10th. And then several staff members have some updates for you tonight.
What time was on the 9th?
Sorry. The 9th will be 7 o'clock, our regular time, I believe.
6:30.
I'm sorry, 6:30.
6:30?
6:30 on the 9th, okay. And 7 o'clock on the 10th. Chief, can you give an Orange Cove update, please?
Yes. Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Thank you, City Manager. I just wanted to give you an update on the Orange Cove Dispatch. I promised you that several meetings ago, that we would be coming hopefully to an end with our obligation with the City of Orange Cove and dispatching for them. Initially, our anticipated end date was December 31st of 2011. Unfortunately, we are not going to be able to meet that date. There's a couple of reasons that this has happened, and the 911 system for the City of Orange Cove has not been installed yet. The holdup is with the state, not the City of Orange Cove Police Department. They have been doing everything they can to get this up and running. However, the state has been kind of dragging their feet with it. But they are confident that by the end of January 2012, maybe by the mid of February 2012, that 911 system should be in and operational with the City of Orange Cove. To date, they have hired three dispatchers, and we have successfully trained three dispatchers, and they are currently working full-time for the City of Orange Cove. There's a fourth dispatcher that's in the final phase of the hiring process, and we're anticipating them starting first part of 2012, sometime in January, if everything goes well. As far as what's occurring as far as for our folks, currently we are dispatching only about 25% of the time for the city of Orange Cove right now. They are 75% fully functional at this point. Their dispatchers are three fully trained dispatchers are dispatching out of their own department, and they work strictly out of the Orange Cove Police Department, not out of the Reedley Police Department anymore. The 25% that we are dispatching for them is being done on graveyards. We identify that is our slowest part of the days, graveyards Monday through Thursday. And so that's the only time that we're actually dispatching for them. Currently, we are still handling 100% of their 911 phone calls because their 911 system is not in place yet. But that is not necessarily creating an overload for our folks. And we are still handling approximately about 25% of their non-emergent calls. It's a slow transition because the city of Orange Cove for the past 2 years has been used to calling to 637-4250 to get hold of their police department. So it's a slow transition to get them trained to no longer call 637. They need to call their 626-6600 or whatever the police department number is. So it's a slow transition, and we are hopefully going to work with the city of Orange Cove Police Department to educate the community of Orange Cove to start calling them their department, and so they're not taxing our folks. The outlook, again, we're hopefully by April of May of 2012 as our target date. It's one of those things that unfortunately just by mere professional courtesy, we cannot just cut ties with the city of Orange Cove. It would create a situation that would be completely dangerous for their officers and for the community at large. And it would just be inconceivable for them to even go into a short-term contract with the sheriff's department to dispatch. So we are going to continue to dispatch for them with the anticipation of April, May of 2012 being the final cutoff date. But we are, again, looking at making sure that they are keeping to their end of the bargain and making all these changes quickly. Again, another positive is that it's still profitable for the city of Reedley to continue dispatching. We are continuously getting monthly checks from the city of Orange Cove, and I got to tell you that they're pretty prompt in making their payments, which is really nice. We send them a bill, and within a week, we're getting a check. And it's still very profitable for the city of Reedley, so we're actually gaining some money as a result of that. So that's kind of where we're at this point. That's just an update. I knew this was going to be the last meeting for the year, and I just didn't want you to go into January 2012 thinking that we were cutting ties, which is not the case.
Chief, just a quick question. Do you think four dispatchers on a 24/7 operation is enough?
Personally, no. We handle our 24/7 operation with six dispatchers, but they are very confident that they can do it with four. How, I don't know. I think they're going to supplement a lot of their other staff with temp employees, i.e. asking our dispatchers, other dispatchers in the county that are familiar with the system to come and work part-time and work as temps. I believe that's how they're going to supplement. Any other questions? And I just had one more update. Councilman Chavez had asked several meetings ago about whether the Reedley Police Department was going to embark in trying to get a highway dedication for Officer Javier Behar. And that is something that we have been working on. We met with the family about a month ago, and they have met, and they have actually chosen Highway 180 as a location for the memorial. That was something that they as a family had decided to do. So where do we go from here from this point? We are currently trying to plan a meeting with our local representative because what needs to happen is that there are several steps that need to take place. A resolution has to be drafted and presented and voted on at the next, at whatever voting session is available in 2012 so it can get passed. Once that happens, then the notification goes to Caltrans, and then Caltrans has to look into the area that is being proposed and ensure that there are no right of way issues, and then obviously the dedication occurs, after that portions. We're looking at anywhere from a time frame of anywhere from 6 months to a year before that can actually be put into place. Because we are dealing with the state, it does take a little bit longer. If it was local and they were looking at a local county road, it's something that we could do within a couple of months. But because of the state, there is a process that we have to follow.
Would that be on the 180 portion there by Minkler? Is that what you're looking at? They are looking at
somewhere either on the 180 between Reed Avenue and Frankwood, or they're in the area of Minkler. It's just going to really depend on where the Caltrans allows us to put it, or allows the family to put it.
Yeah, because that portion of Highway 180 is going to be changing a lot.
Absolutely.
When that four-way goes through there, if any of you have looked at those plans at all.
Yes.
I have, and it's very different from the way the roads are lined right now.
Absolutely. And that is something that obviously, we will continuously monitor because that could change the dynamics of where the sign is placed.
Yes.
So.
Good idea.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, at this point, we will adjourn the public session of our meeting, and we will be going into closed session. And I was wondering if there's any public comment on our closed session item this evening before we go into that closed session. Okay. Well, you all have a very Merry Christmas and a
nice holiday.
Happy New Year. Coming quickly, I'm sure.